From various experiences that I've had in the rabbinate, both good and bad, I have arrived at the following rule. If you're going to give a sermon that's going to get you in trouble, you should do it on a holiday weekend. I don't know what you are all doing here. Don't you know that this is a holiday weekend? You should be listening to some other rabbi's sermon. You're probably, none of you are probably locals. You probably all came into Los Angeles for... And the reason that the sermon is going to get me in trouble is not because I'm going to say anything terrible or shocking, I don't think, but because any attempt to make a distinction in our society of any kind between men and women is automatically suspect. And someone, no matter the comparison, man or woman, will be upset. So here goes. This morning, and the catalyst for this discussion, is the story in the Torah about the daughters of Tzelophehad. This is what happens. The Israelites are in the desert, and the daughters of Tzelophehad don't have a male relative who is supposed to inherit their father's portion in the land. And they want to inherit. But there is no mechanism in the Torah for daughters to inherit. So they go to Moses and they say, this isn't fair. It should be ours. And Moses responds like a man. And I'm going to explain what that is when I get back to Moses, but first, a little history. In fact, if you're speaking chronologically, it's a lot of history because we're going back to the Garden of Eden, to the beginning of the beginning. When God tells Adam and Eve, don't eat from the fruit of that tree. And Eve decides that she's curious. Adam is sitting there like a bump on a log. But she wants to know what's going to happen if you eat from the fruit of the tree. Which is, by the way, the question that anybody who reads that wants to know. And any child would ask. As soon as you tell a child you can't do this, the first thing they say is, what happens if I do it? Adam has not the wit, the brio, the vitality, the intelligence, the curiosity to ask that, but Eve does, and so she eats. And then Eve has an inspiration. She realizes that she's about to get into a lot of trouble because she did the one thing that God told her not to do. So she goes to Adam and says, eat. And Adam eats. He says nothing. He doesn't say, are you sure? Is this okay? Should I do this? She puts a plate in front of him with a slice of whatever fruit it was, and eats. And then, of course, the world comes tumbling down. Skip now to Abraham. Abraham can't have a child, at least not with Sarah. So what does she say to him? Take Hagar, have a child with Hagar, because if I can't have a child, you still need to have a child, so take Hagar. And what does Abraham do? He eats. He doesn't say, wait a minute, I can't do that. He doesn't ask. He doesn't nothing. He just does what she says. And then when they have a child, Sarah gets upset and clashes with Hagar and clashes with Ishmael. So she says to him, throw him out of the house. Now, Abraham gets a little upset. So he says to God, what am I supposed to do? Notice Abraham doesn't say no. He doesn't say, sweetheart, listen, it's a lovely idea, but really, he's my kid. He feels completely helpless to answer the question, so he says to God, what do I do? And God says, she told you to throw him out of the house, throw him out of the house. Which is why I think, by the way, people think God is a man. Because he listens too. So sure enough, Abraham throws him out of throws Ishmael and Hagar out of the house. Then eventually they come back, and but then Sarah and Abraham have a child, and essentially Sarah says, you know, it's lovely that you have this Ishmael. By the way, Isaac's the one who's going to carry on your heritage, and he does. Now fast forward to Isaac. Isaac's an old man, and he likes Esau. And it even tells us why he likes Esau. The Bible is not shy about letting you know. He likes Esau because Esau makes him meat. Sa'id b'piv, he likes the way that Esau goes out, he hunts animals, he brings them home, he feeds his father. Not a real sophisticated view of your children, but Isaac, needless to say, is a man. Rebekah, though, favors Jacob. And she knows that Jacob's the one who's supposed to carry on the tradition. So she disguises Jacob. And by the way, Jacob's upset about this. Jacob thinks he's going to get in trouble. But she says to him what presumably Eve said, which is, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it. If there's any sin involved, it'll be mine. What gives her the right to say that? I have no idea. But she puts hair on his arm so that he will feel like Esau. He comes before his old blind father, tricks him, gets the birthright, just as Rebekah had planned. And now, who's in trouble? Not Rebekah. Jacob's in trouble. Esau comes home. He doesn't say, I'm going to kill my mother. He says, I'm going to kill my brother. Because his mother's a girl, and his brother's a man. So if he's going to fight, or woman and boy, he's going to fight with a boy. So Rebekah manages that too. In fact, there's a wonderful essay about Rebekah by Maurice Samuel called Rebekah the Manager. She says to Jacob, run away. So Jacob dutifully runs away. She even tells him where to go. She says, go to the house of Laban, my brother, everything will be fine. Jacob goes. He goes to the house of Laban, he wants to marry Rachel. But Laban, and by the way, Leah, have different plans. So he wakes up in the morning and he's not with Rachel, he's with Leah. Now you ask yourself, how in the world could he have thought that he was sleeping with Rachel only to discover that he's sleeping with Leah? And the rabbis give many answers, but I would like to boil them down to three words. He's a man. Sometimes he pays less attention than he ought. And Leah and Rachel between them, with their handmaidens, populate Israel. Now that you have the background, we can go to the daughters of Tzelophehad. They come to Moses and they say, we should inherit. Now Moses knows that he can't make a new law in Israel. It's got to be God's law. So what does he say to them? He says, I don't know what to do. And he asks God. And God says, they inherit. Now realize that when God says they inherit, what they're doing is something extraordinary, because we've just read the story about the spies. And what do the spies do? All these men go to Israel. And they come back and they say, we can't conquer the land. There are giants there. It's impossible. Let's go back to Egypt. In the meantime, the daughters of Tzelophehad are saying, we want to inherit the land. We want to make sure we get our father's portion because we believe that that's going to be our place. Which may be why the rabbis say, in the desert, the women built fences and the men tore them down. Because according to the rabbis, the women didn't participate in the worship of the golden calf. The men did. Now, why is this? Why does this distinction exist between women and men in the Torah, and you'll have to decide if it's true in life? That much trouble I'm not going to get into. It's because of what we also see in this morning's Torah portion. This morning, we read about Rosh Chodesh, the new month, in the same portion that talks about the daughters of Tzelophehad. Now, the holiday of the new month is the holiday traditionally associated with women in Judaism. For one obvious reason, and I think one deeper reason. The obvious reason is because it represents a monthly cycle. The moon goes and comes each month, right? It disappears, it comes back. And so since a woman's body works on a monthly cycle like the moon, it was an association that the Jewish tradition made. But there's a deeper reason too, which is when the new moon is celebrated, when we chant the Rosh Chodesh prayer, and you look up in the sky to see the new moon, what do you see? Nothing. It's a new moon, it hasn't appeared yet. The sky is dark on Rosh Chodesh. So in order to celebrate Rosh Chodesh, you have to have a vision of what will be. You're not celebrating what is, but what you can bring into being. Now, let's go back. Eve knew that life in Eden wasn't life for human beings. The truth is, it was a setup. Anybody who grew up, as I did, watching the old Star Trek knows that this theme was repeated again and again. They land on a planet where everything is perfect. And sooner or later, Captain Kirk will say, we can't live here. Everything is perfect here. We need struggle. We need pain. And they go on back into the ship and they go out into the space. First of all, so that you can have an episode next week. But also, to make the point that human beings are not actually designed to live in perfection. Adam didn't know that, but Eve did. Ishmael wasn't the person to carry on the Jewish tradition. Abraham didn't know that, but Sarah did. The same thing is true of Esau. He wasn't the person to carry on the Jewish tradition, but Isaac didn't know that. In fact, Isaac is symbolically and literally blind. Rebekah's the one who sees. Isaac only sees darkness. Rebekah sees the light that will come into being. It's not too much to say that in the Torah, women are the visionaries. They're the ones who bring things into being. They're the ones who nurture the people, which is why when Miriam dies, the wells stop up. There is no water, which leads to the sin of Moses that prevents him from going into the land. Because when she's gone, so is the vision, at least for a brief time, until it's restored again. So here's a distinction that the Torah gives us, and you will have to decide whether it is true in your life, whether it is true in your experience, that in fact, women have a vision of the future, maybe because they carry it within themselves, that possibility of creating the future. It's symbolized by Rosh Chodesh, but it also threads through all the stories of the Torah. Sometimes, as we see again in the Torah, men can catch a glimpse of what it is that is envisioned and can be partners in that creation. Sometimes they must, as Moses did, just turn to God and say, I don't know, and get the right answer. But even though the thread is a thin one, and it's woven so that you have to follow it carefully, the Torah makes clear that the daughters of Tzlofchad are in a noble tradition that has not ended to this day of understanding what the future is, where you have to go, and what it is that you need to get there. That may be why, originally, you know, when God created both Adam and Eve and put them in the garden, he said, I'm creating an Ezer Kenegdo, which means someone to oppose the other. Someone to show you a direction that you would not otherwise have seen. Someone to open your eyes. Every society, every individual needs that vision. The Jewish people needs it as well. So, on behalf of the daughters of Tzlochad, let me say how grateful we should be in our nation as we celebrate its birth, that we have had great leaders, both men and women, who have envisioned the future, who have created the future, and who've worked together to give that future to all of us. Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.